Hello, this is Dean Gocher. I'm founder and director of the Institution for Authority Research. I encourage you to trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not to your own understanding, and in all your ways acknowledge Him, and let the Lord be the one who directs your steps or your paths. That's Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, and this program is about a process that I call diaprax, which is simply leaning to your own understanding and not trusting in the Lord with all your heart. And the praxis part of diaprax is putting it into action. It's not enough to think, but also to do. There's always been this struggle down through the ages to explain the dialectic process, but it really comes down to the simple conflict that comes between a father and his son or his children. The father's structure of thought is different than the child's structure of thought. And it's important to understand this distinction, and we find it in Scripture. Hebrews 12, 5 through 11, gives us a father's structure of thought, and that's the father's authority. The consequence of the father's authority to the child is, when he disobeys, the child disobeys, is chastening. And so we find in Romans 7, 14 through 25, the consequence of a father's authority in the life of a child, and that's the guilty conscience. If you're accountable to someone and you don't do what they've told you to do, the end result is a guilty conscience. Now, that is didactic or patriarchal in structure. It's a top-down, right, wrong, above, below way of thinking. Called a paradigm. It's called a patriarchal paradigm. Patriarch is the father. And that can apply to forms of government. It can apply to the church. It can apply to your own home. But there's an ultimate accountability to someone other than your own feelings or the feelings of others that are in common with your feelings. Now, the antithesis, because in the dialectics, there's three steps or three areas of conduct. There's the thesis, there's the antithesis, and there's the synthesis. In reality, there is no synthesis. Now, in our imagination, in our perception, there is synthesis, but there's only right and wrong. And when we find this beginning in the garden, in Genesis, God tells Adam, you can eat of all the trees, fruit in the garden, except for this one. And he describes the tree as a tree of knowledge, good and evil. But now we have a restraint. And in that moment of restraint, now there's above, below. Somebody who's the restrainer gives somebody who's under restraint what they can or cannot do. And the objective then, if dialectic reasoning, is to overcome this disparity, this above, below, right, wrong, above, up, top, bottom structure of thought. And that we find practiced or put into exercise in Genesis 3, 1 through 6. That is that procedure. Those scriptures define the dialectic process. There's nothing new under the sun. Hegel is most noted for the dialectic process, Marx for applying it, and including Sigmund Freud. Sigmund Freud was built off of the dialectic process. But it's not new. There's nothing new under the sun. The first practice or praxis or acting or performing of the dialectic process was in the garden with the woman who, first of all, she had feelings, in disagreement to the command. She was told to do one thing, felt like doing something different. And it was just different. See, it wasn't in disobedience in her mind. It was just something she wanted to do in regards or relate with in regards to something she was told she could not have. And then the facilitator of change, if you ever hear that term, facilitator of change, the first facilitator of change is in the garden. He's the one who came into the life of two children. If you look at structures, Adam and Eve were basically as children under a father's authority. Now, let's break this down. The difference between the patriarchal paradigm, the above below, I'm above, you're below. You know, God says, my ways are not your ways, neither your thoughts, my thoughts. As far as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts and your thoughts. And that is also true for a father and a child relationship. The father gives commands to children that they don't understand. You cannot explain to a three-year-old why you're telling them to do certain things. They just have to accept your authority. And in reality, they're doing it by faith. Children really do have faith. It's interesting that Jesus said when he returns, will there be faith? Something happens in that child's life that moves them away from faith to sight. And that is what the dialectic process does. Because you notice that Eve saw the tree was good for food, pleasing to the eyes and desires to make one wise. She moved away from faith, what Dad said, to how she felt and what she thought in the moment. That is the dialectic process. It's not new. The new world order goes back to Genesis 3, 1 through 6. That is the procedure to produce a world system without a father's authority, without, in essence, godly restraint. And we're certainly seeing what's happening to our nation. This applies to everything that's going on in our country. It is not it's not a race issue. It's really not a social issue. It's a sin issue. We've moved away from a patriarchal paradigm to what's called a heresiarchal paradigm. You've heard the word change. That's heresy. In other words, you have a standard that you've been given, and then you start tweaking it and changing it. See, that's heresy. Somebody would be called a heretic who's coming in and moving people away from the truth. They're giving him what seems to be true. The Bible says there's a way that seemeth to be right unto man, but the end thereof is death. And we find that actually performed or demonstrated for us, and we're all living the consequence of it in the garden. And so the dialectic is simply man's effort to justify himself over and against godly authority. Now, the three stages, supposedly, and they're cyclical. Have you ever studied the dialectic? It's thesis moves to antithesis. In other words, there's a conflict that comes in to a person's life, and then he has to resolve these differences, and so he compromises to synthesize. And then he comes back to a thesis again. He has a position for a little bit, and then something comes in that forces him to rethink his position, and then there's compromise. That's eventually synthesis. He finds what can work, and he just cyclical, on and on and on and on, until finally, because there is an ultimate agenda to this, is there is no longer an antithesis. There's only thesis. Now, I'm going to look at that as a formula, because that is the formula that's used in the classroom today. The group grade, if you've ever heard of group grade or team building, that is the dialectic process, and it follows this formula. First of all, I'm going to give you a traditional patriarchal structure, and it only has thesis, antithesis. There is no synthesis. There's right or wrong. See, the father says, I'm above and you're below. Do what I tell you to do. So let's look at the father's structure, the father's authority. And we find this from Genesis to Revelation. In fact, all of your life has been about a father's authority. Do you do what you're told? Now, it can come in the form of a teacher or your boss or somebody else. Somebody is coming in with a system, a way of thinking that would be equivalent to a father. And there are four things or four attributes to this father's authority. Number one, he gives commands and rules to be obeyed. And he also gives facts and truth to be accepted as is, that is by faith. And we find that certainly in the classroom with a traditional teacher. They're up front writing on the board or giving the children exercises on whether it's math or science or any subject of this is how things are. This is how you write. This is how you do this math formula. This is how you mix these chemicals to produce your desired outcome. And so there is this authority structure giving those who under their authority direction. Bible says it is not in man to direct his steps. And so we find from the garden on, God giving man direction. Do this, don't do that. And so there's a right, wrong, black, white, sheep, goats, heaven, hell, above, below way of thinking. That's a patriarchal paradigm. And the children are to accept this. You know, children are to obey their parents. Notice there's a clause in that, in the Lord. Because dad and mom are not perfect, but that office is. The parent can be a tyrant, but that doesn't mean the office is wrong. It's just the parents are not subject to a higher authority in their own life. They're doing whatever they feel like doing. Now, I'm getting ahead. Number one, the father's authority, this structure is commands and rules to be obeyed, and facts and truth to be accepted as is. Now, the scriptures talk about, to break this down even further, about faith, you know, the conflict between faith and sight. Obedience needs to come from faith. See, if you're just obeying, it might be you really don't want to. See, if you don't have faith in somebody, but you fear them, you know, the beginning of knowledge is the fear of God. And so the child knows that they're going to be chastened if they don't obey the parents, so therefore they're obeying, even if they don't want to. But God doesn't want us to live like that. He has given us His Word, and in it, as we come to know Him, give our life to Him, He has given us the Holy Spirit, so we can have the joy and the peace and the love that is from Him. And therefore, we don't serve Him out of fear. We serve Him out of love. So you don't want your children to be obeying you out of fear. They when they're doing something wrong, there should be this element of fear. That's the guilty conscience. You know, there is a consequence for our thoughts and our actions. But you don't want your children to be obeying you out of that fear of chastening. They need to be obeying you out of faith. See, and so the works follow the faith. And so that's key to understanding the issue between faith, what Jesus said, when He returns, will there be faith? Well, the implied answer is no. And the reason is something happened to the children. The children were liberated from parental authority. And that is what the dialectic process does. That's what Genesis 3, 1 through 6 is all about. Some facilitator of change came in and helped two children rethink, see, how they came to solution. How they solved a problem, how they solved a crisis. In their case, it was a very private crisis. They wanted to do something they were told they could not do. And this dialectic process helps us, quote-unquote helps us, to justify why we're okay and we can do whatever we feel like doing. Pretty much sums up our culture today. There is no fear of accountability for people's actions today. It's just don't get caught. Now, again, going back, number one, I'm harping on this because this is very important. We have lost a father's structure of thought today. In fact, our culture does not support it. With a father giving commands and rules to be obeyed, facts and truth to be accepted as is. Now, if you want to break that down, that's called lower order thinking skills. Now, they wouldn't call it skills. They would call it just inculcating. You're just obeying because you've been told you believe in somebody, and so therefore you accept what they say by faith. You have faith in them, so you believe what they say, and then you go do. And that certainly is a traditional classroom. The teacher writes out the facts, and the children are to learn it, and then to replicate it. Demonstrate to the teacher that they have learned what they have been told. And you certainly want that. In an engineer, for example, you come to a bridge, you want him to be able to say, I know it's safe to cross the bridge. And you say, well, why? It's because I attended to the facts. Somebody told me what works. And yes, later maybe I've experimented with it, but I certainly was just simply learning how it worked. And so the father gives commands and rules to be obeyed, facts and truth to be accepted as is. Number two, and this is very important, he blesses those children who obey. Those children who have faith in Him, He blesses them. God says, if you obey me, you're blessed. If you disobey me, you're cursed. So the third one is chastening. God chastens those He loves. Because you see, God has to chasten all of us because we come into this world with flesh. God is spirit. He's above, we're below. And so He chastens us not because He hates us. There's another thing He does that shows His hate, not towards us, but towards what we do. But He chastens us that we might come back to doing what's right. That we would trust in Him with all our heart and not lean to our own understanding. In other words, going by faith rather than sight. Now, I'm going someplace with this because the group grade in the classroom is to undo the father's authority. So I have to explain what is being undone in every child that's sitting in those group sessions that seem so benign and so good because the kids are learning how to get along with one another and work together on projects. But there's an ulterior motive. I earned a teacher's degree in this process. I knew something was wrong. I didn't know what it was. Teachers know something's wrong with this. Common Core. They know something's wrong with it, unless they've bought into it. See, as long as you still have a conscience that holds you accountable to there is right and there is wrong, as long as you have that conscience, this is going to bother you, this process. But the process has a way of moving you away from the conscience to the superego. Now, the superego incorporates feelings, and I'm getting ahead of myself again. So, number one, facts and rules to be obeyed, commands and rules to be obeyed, facts and truth to be accepted as is. Number two, it's necessary to bless children, to encourage them to do what's right. And then to chasten those who do what's wrong, to encourage them to do what's right. And according to dialectic reasoning, that is where the father's authority is created. The children obeying the parents is what creates parental authority. See, they turn it around. See, as long as your children are obeying you, you have authority. And now the fourth one keeps this all in order. The fourth one is to cast out those children who disrespect parental authority. See, if the child rejects one, the father's right to give commands and rules to be obeyed, facts and truth be accepted as is, rejects even the blessings from the father, and rejects the chastening. In fact, Hebrews, God says that's a bastard. If you refuse chastisement, you're not one of my children. You can't be a child under God's authority, inherited into the family if you don't accept chastening. Because that's what contrition or repentance, all of this comes from the chastening. And that chastening brings us back to the Father's authority. God chastens those he loves. And so we have, therefore, the four attributes of a father's authority. And it's very important as fathers to do what's right before God, before the Lord. Because you can be a dictator, and God is a loving God. He doesn't get up, as a parent, you wouldn't get up and say, well, I want to spank some child today. No, it's you want to encourage them to do what's right because you know the consequence. Now, there's an important event that happens in a person's life that changes the way they look at things. While you were a child, you resented your parents telling you you could do things or you couldn't do certain things. Things you wanted to do, they said you couldn't do, and things you didn't want to do, they told you to do. And so there's this element of resentment towards parental authority. But when you hold that child the first time, it is your child, your baby, in your hand. That little baby you're holding in your hand is from you. Nothing else in this life have you produced. That child is you. And it changes everything. Even Abraham Maslow, his hierarchy of felt needs was all about liberating children from parental authority. He writes in his journal, "My children got me into conflict with my theory." Once he became a parent, all of a sudden he realized what he was doing was wrong. Your life changes once you hold that child and you realize, that's from me. That's not like the car or the house or anything else. You go and work for that, but this is part of me. And the spouse, the wife can say the same thing. See, it's very clear. The whole issue of marriage today is about this issue right now. We've rejected this. Because no one but a husband and wife, a man and a woman, can produce a child. See, that is a result of life given by two people, husband and wife, become one. See, man and woman become one in that child. And it changes everything. That produces a top-down authority structure. And that's what Hebrews is all about. It's explained, Hebrews 12, 5 through 11, explains to us a father's structure in the home. And Romans 7, 14 through 25, just reveals the consequence that we don't obey our fathers. We don't obey God. And Paul says, who can deliver me from this body of death? This body, this flesh, wants to do whatever it wants to do for pleasure. And I therefore disobey my parents. And this is true whether it's for between you and God or you as a child before your parents. Now, that's the father's structure, those four things. To rules and commands, facts and truth. Number two, to bless. Number three, to chasten. And number four, and you don't want this, but it's to cast out. Now, that's the wrath. So you don't you want God's chastening. I mean, you don't get up in the morning and say, you know, God, I want to do something wrong so that you can chasten me. But you accept his chastening because it is bringing you into right relationship with him. You don't want his wrath because the chastening restores. Wrath destroys. Wrath will kill you. Say, wrath drove Adam and Eve went out of the garden. Now, God chastened them out of the garden. They had to work by the sweat of their brow. But he didn't kill them right there. But there came a time of wrath. That's the flood. And as in the days of Noah, there's going to, in the last days, be the same thing. God's going to pour out his wrath. There's a time where God says, I've had it. No more. Now, what happened then is, in the dialectic, there was an understanding of the child's nature. Now, we're all born into this world as children. Adam was the only one who wasn't created as a child. Now, Eve was created from Adam. But Adam was created by God. And so he never went through this child stage. He knew better. Eve was deceived, but Adam knew better. God said, you rule. Adam knew he was to rule, but he turned authority over to the woman. See, today men don't want to rule. They let the women rule. And therefore, if the men let the women rule, then you can't have a father's authority. That's all gone. You end up with a matriarchal culture. That's a feelings-driven culture, not a patriarchal culture, which is position. See, God gave Adam a position. Do this, don't do that. It gives you a position. Position is always given to you, external to you. Your feelings are internal. The matriarch is really feelings-driven. The patriarchal is position-driven. And it directed, you could say. But there is an external authority giving you direction. The matriarchal is the mother's heart. Nothing wrong with it, but it is the desire of the heart of the wife is to the husband. If that is not in order, then the desire of the heart of the wife will be to it will be a mother's heart to her children. And certainly a mother needs to have a heart for her children, protect them even sometimes today from the abuse of a husband, from their father. But you see, it's all out of order if the desire of the heart of the wife is to the children or to herself. The husband can't rule. And so this is why God was telling Adam. There was a lot that went on in those few verses. You know, Adam, you're to rule. And in fact, you find the very language coming from God to Adam and Eve when Adam says he didn't go to Eve, he went to Adam. Not until he was pouring out his judgment did he go to Eve, but he went to Adam and he says, you know, when Adam said, we're afraid of you because we were naked, God said, who told you? See, I didn't create you to sit down and do this scientific method, higher order thinking skills and morals and ethics to discover yourself, to liberate yourself from my authority. I created you to hear. You notice when Jesus asked Peter, who do men say that I am, and then who do you say that I am? Peter's response was, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus' response to Peter was, this didn't come from you, Peter. This came from my Father. And that's the rock. The rock isn't Peter. Peter's a pebble. The rock is the Word of God that comes from the Father. Well, you'd say, well, it's about the Son, but it's the obedient Son to the Father. The Father sent the Son. Jesus, equal with the Father. See, I and my Father are one. I and God are one. And yet, at the same time, he humbled himself, took on the form of a man as a child under a father's authority. And he said, what my Father commands, that's what I do. I can do nothing of my own self. See, he humbled himself before to show us that he's the perfect Son, the only begotten Son of God, perfect Son, obedience to his Father in all things commanded. And then he gives us the same structure. He who does my Father's will in heaven is my brother, sister, my mother. And so you have in the gospel message, not just the Son, but the Son's obedience to the Father. Take every thought captive to the obedience. What's implied there? The Father. Obedience to the Father. The obedience of Christ. And so, in fact, Jesus rescues us from our earthly father because there can only be one. If you have two fathers, now there's confusion. Now there's dialogue, and we'll get to that. But with one father, there's one command. Do this, don't do that. And so that's why, call no man father on earth, for you have one father which is in heaven. Getting back to the child, children obey your parents, clause, comma, in the Lord. So the only time a child can say, well, Dad, I can't do that, and Dad might chasten you. He has the right to chasten you. Oh, he might even have the right to cast you out. But as a believing child, you can say, Dad, I can't do that because God said I am not to do that. I'm not to rob a bank. I am not to do that immoral activity that you're doing. And you can do whatever you want to with me, but I will be a witness for the truth rather than participate in your unrighteousness. See, and so that's why that clause is there. It rescues the child's conscience from tyranny, because parents can be tyrants. And, of course, the world looks at parents who are tyrants and then justifies getting rid of the whole parental structure, that's top-down authority system. Now, the child's nature is to approach pleasure and avoid pain. And I give in my presentations, speak all over the country, on the dialectic process and its effect in education and in our personal life, even in a church, what effect it's had on the quote-unquote church. Is the issue of dopamine. We have within us a chemical the body produces that anytime we touch something that's pleasurable, whether it's touch, taste, sight, smell, sound, whatever the five senses picks up, there are nerves that identify pleasure. And in that impulse that's being sent to the brain to make us aware of what's pleasurable, we may not be aware of it at that moment because it's on its way to the brain. God has hardwired us to pick up the things that are pleasurable in the environment. Whether it's the smell of something, or it's the touching of something, or the sight, the visual of something, the seeing of something, or whatever information is coming to the brain that conveys this pleasure, the nerves have a connecting area called a synaptic gap, and our body naturally produces some 60 different neurotransmitters, which are liberated. They call it liberated or emancipated into this gap from the nerve that's been in contact with whatever was pleasurable or painful. And a lot of chemicals, like I said, serotonin, GABA, but the one I want to speak about is dopamine. And so whenever you touch something or taste something that's pleasurable, the nerve sends that information towards the brain. It then, that information has to get to the next nerve to take it on to the rest of the way to the brain. And in that little gap, dopamine is liberated and then travels across the gap, very small gap, and hits the receptor, the beginning of the next nerve, and that message is then sent on. But the dopamine is a chemical. And so all habitual drugs are tied to this dopamine. Whether it's cocaine or methamphetamine, they all either imitate the dopamine or prevent its reuptake. In other words, like Morse code, you have to remove it from that gap so it's broken down, recycled, and used again. And so there are chemicals like, or neurotransmitters like GABA that break it down and recycles it. So the drug comes in and prevents that from happening. So the dopamine stays in that gap. You get a longer rush of pleasure, or it imitates it, or itself stimulates the acts like dopamine. And so that's what all drugs, in fact, caffeine is dopamine-oriented, and tobacco. That's why it's hard for people to get off of tobacco, because it stimulates the dopamine, the pleasure. And the dopamine is the want. Now, you're not aware of it until it gets to your brain. In your brain, you have billions of neurons, and they all interconnect with one another. And in that little gap of connection, that synaptic gap, dopamine is released. So now in your brain, you get a big dose of dopamine, and now you become aware that you've just touched or tasted something that's pleasurable. And your natural inclination, this is how God gave this to us, is you want it. And so now it's not enough just to want it. You become frustrated if you sensed it, but you couldn't do anything to identify it. You want it. I see it. You want to identify what did this, because you want it. And so, because it's just momentary. You might have touched something and moved away. And they say, wow, I like that. I want that. That's pleasurable. And now you look for it. And so you look through your eyes, or you feel around for it. You want to identify where it's at, what it is, what stimulated this dopamine, this pleasure. And then once you identify it, then you want to contain it. You want to grab it. You want to hold on to it. You want to keep it around, because as long as you keep it around, you can get dopamine. you have to realize this is really devastating because, see, it is in our nature to approach pleasure. Anytime something is in the environment that stimulates dopamine, we want to hang around. This is why the preacher said, vanity, vanity, all is vanity. The child is not in love with the toy you give them. They're in love with the pleasure the toy stimulates. See, and they also then they avoid pain. Now, so here's what happens is you give a child a toy for their birthday, and then you tell them to put it up, and they keep playing with it. Because they have decided that your command, like God in the garden telling Adam, you know, don't eat of that tree, all of a sudden now their lust for that pleasure, that tree stimulating dopamine. That's why Eve said to Adam, her opinion was not to eat of it nor touch it. God didn't say that, not eat it. But it was she was revealing her desire. See, every time they went by that thou shalt not tree, there was dopamine being liberated. They just restrained themselves. Because there was a command from God. They would have if God hadn't said it. But then somebody came into the garden and said, let's look at that tree and let's start thinking about it. You know, if you tell your child not to do something and an uncle comes along and says, let's just look at that and see what you think about it yourself, you know. And she doesn't give God's command, she gives her opinion. Your opinion carries your feelings. For God has said, thou shalt not eat of it, nor touch it. Oh, lest ye die. Now, I'm going to talk about an ought in a little bit, but the key to the ought, your dad says you can't go out, and you go, why, to get him into dialogue, and then he says, because I said so, which cuts off the dialogue, and you know, now it's obey me or else. There's the chastening and the wrath. And so you talk to yourself, and you go, well, I ought to be able to go up. You can't have an ought without somebody telling you cannot. So the ought is always engendered from a not. And the ought is always good in our own eyes. This is the power of this. See, the moment she said, nor touch it, and then Satan said, you won't die. She didn't say, will to die. See, didn't do will to not, will to, will not. There's the antithesis. Right, wrong, black, white, sheep, goats, heaven, hell. No, once he got her to share her feelings of dissatisfaction, her ought doesn't carry a father's thou shalt not. Her ought, your ought is always right, good in your own eyes. And the moment he said, you will not die, it confirmed her ought, because in her ought, there was nothing wrong with it. I ought to be able to touch it. There was nothing wrong with that. I just can't because God said I couldn't do it. Because she wouldn't say, well, man, if I touch that tree, I'm going to die. I ought to be able to touch it and die. No, she wouldn't say that. It was the dopamine in her. It's stimulated by the environment. And she decided the flesh, the lust of the flesh, was now more important than obedience to God. And it was the lust of the eyes because she saw. And then the pride of life is your ability to justify. Your ability of controlling whatever it is that stimulates dopamine. Do you realize the people you say you love, you really don't love them? Just think about this. You love the dopamine. You love to be around them because of the dopamine they stimulate within you. You're in love with the chemical in your body. You're not in love with them. See, only God can bring true love into your life, the Holy Spirit. See, all the world can, all this of the world, lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world's passing away because it's just momentary. That's why eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage and all this just lust everywhere, enjoyment, pleasure, you know, augmenting pleasure. That's a child's nature. We live in a culture today that everybody's asking everybody else, how do you feel and what do you think? Not for the truth. What is right and what is wrong? Oh, what you're doing is wrong. Boy, you start going around telling people, well, what you're doing is wrong. You're not going to have any friends. Nobody's going to hang around with you. You know, as long as you say, well, I don't think or I don't feel, that's your opinion. And as long as we share our opinions, we're okay. But do not come in and start preaching and teaching because that's the Father's paradigm. It wasn't this way 100 years ago. But it's now become the way to think today in our culture because we've moved away from truth and instead we have turned to the ways of the world. All that's of the world is our nature as a child to approach pleasure and avoid pain. Well, I went way over my half hour here, so I'll pick up and make this second section a little shorter.